Ima Hodge Platts came to the Palouse area with her parents from Missouri in 1900 and cooked for a number of years in the harvest fields. Here she describes cutting, shocking, and thrashing grain and the art involved, and also cooking for the harvest crew.
In the crew and everything, we had 32 men to cook for, 3 meals a day.
Well, when you're talking about how from the beginning, when the grain is first cut, now do you describe that to me again?
Well, when it's first cut, it's cut with the binder. You know what a binder is.
I've seen the pictures of them.
Oh, you never did see one, huh?
No.
Well, they have to cut. Sometimes they head grain. And then when they do that, well, that's a different setup too, when they head it.
But with the binder, then how does,
well,
what does that
the
do?
Well, with the binder, why, they go around the field and they cut the grain, cut it off. There's a sickle, it cuts it. And then your bundles are made so they'll be the same size, you see. And then the binder kicks those bundles out. It'll go around and go up. They're pulled up, elevated up, and they keep, that'll go around. And as your sickle goes across your grain, well, then that takes it up, and then when you can set it, your bundles will be the certain size, you know, that you want. They're only
about 2 feet wide, maybe a foot wide.
Well, they're the height of the grain, as high as your grain is, but the twine that ties the bundles, it goes through the center of the bundle, and that's cut off, and you've got the heads on one end and your stubs on the other, where it's cut from the grain.
And it's tied with twine at the same time.
Yes, it's tied with the twine. As the binder cuts it off and it gets a certain amount, well, then it's adjusted so that it'll kick that out. Whenever it gets so full, why, it's made that it'll kick it out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then your bundle will roll out on the ground.
Okay, then what happens?
Well, and then you have to get someone to shock that up. And there's about 7 or 8 of those bundles put in the shock. Would you know how to shock one?
I wouldn't know how
those
to do
bundles,
it.
Those bundles, you know, the bundles are the height of the grain that's cut.
Mm-hmm.
And that twine tied around the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that binder kicks it out, and it'll cut more, and that'll go in your it'll come right through your binder and ties that grain up, you know.
So then,
in a certain size bundle.
Then so many bundles make a shock?
Yes, they can put so many. It all depends on how many bundles they put into the shock. It depends on the condition that the grain's in. If it needs to be aired out a little more or something, maybe they won't make such big shocks. Sometimes the grain is just shocked two bundles. One bundle crisscross, you know, just like the other, but only two in a place. But a shock of grain, they generally have, about 6 bundles in a shock, and that's shocked up, and they'll stand up on the field, you know, stand up in the air, and that lets it dry. And
one man does that job, goes around shocking.
Well, they have different shockers, you know. Usually, yes, if it's only one, but then he's not following that binder, maybe. it's already been bound, you see, and he's gone on, the one that rode the binder, he's gone on to another piece of ground or something, maybe to cut more.
How long does the grain stand there and dry in the shocks?
Well, they just, it all depends on if it's, as soon as it's dry enough, why they like to, as soon as it's cured, they like to thrash it, you know. And that all depends on how quick you can get a thrasher. You see, the machine, the thrashing machine is all of its own. And these bundles are made with the binder.
Mm-hmm. So it could stand there for a week or more?
Oh, it stands over that because it's got to season, like if it's too wet. You see, and then you stack all those bundles together, but then zap the mold. And it all depends on the condition of the weather and things. That makes a difference. Sometimes it rains on those bundles when they're in the shock, and they have to turn those. And that's a job for the farmer to have to do if it's a lot of rain, why, so that it won't spoil the grain. See, if they were left, why, they'd start to grow and sprout.
Is it hard to shock? Is there any trick to piling your bundles so they stand to,
well,
against each
yes.
other?
Yes, I guess there is. I never did shock, but they always put two together, I know, to start the shock, and then they'll stack around those two. And I think the condition the grain is in depends on how many they put in the shock. You see, it'll dry quicker if you don't have too many, and it depends on the weather that comes. And a lot of times if it rains, why, they've got to take and turn those bundles if it rains a whole lot, as soon as they get dry enough in order for not to sprout.
Well, the thrashing crew, the crew that you work with, that didn't include the binder then, it was just the...
No, it didn't include, that was just the, after it was in the shop. And that didn't include the...
So then your harvest crew came along, right?
Well,
after that.
That's when the thrasher come. It was separate crew to what the...
Right.
What is in, what cuts the grain, you know, that's all together separate.
And what did the thrashing crew do then? With how did that work?
Well, that's the one that takes care of it after it's cut and dried, getting it conditioned to be thrashed. So you can't just cut it and thrash it
right
away. It's got to season like.
Well, when your crew started in, when the harvest crew then started with that, how did they go about picking up the shocks?
Well, the shocks were already up. They
mm-hmm.
stand up, those bundles do. And you just put your fork in them and put them where you want them. They'd have to haul them to the machine. The bundle haulers have to pick up those shocks and load it on this wagon that they haul it to the machine in. And they have to drive it to where the thrashing machine's set. They just put it in a spot, you know, and they don't move it around and without they won't have to move to a different field or something. It's interesting to see that done. See what they have to, they don't know what they have to do to get it. That's all. A lot of people don't know what it means to harvest. They don't know. They think it's just done right now. Well, it's not. It's a long time. You wait a long time for those crops. Sow them in the fall or sometimes in the spring, and then you don't, after it's cut even, you've got to wait till it's matured. If you just thrash it as soon as it's cut, why, your grain would be damp and it might spoil on you. So it's not just, a lot of people don't know what it means.
You say when the pitching of the bundles is not easy, it takes a good knack?
Well, there's an act in it, yes. It's the size that the bundle is that you've got to pick up off of the ground there and loaded up on a bundle wagon. Just pitch it over there. All you have to do is get it in the bed, in the bundle wagon, the bed of the bundle wagon. And that's what the driver that has the team does, is to place that bundle after the pitcher pitches it up on the wagon, you see. After you pitch it up, that you're done with it. There's another, the fellow that drives the team, to move it, for he's the one then that has to place it around on his header bed or on the bed that they haul it in.
Some guys could pitch bundles better than other guys could?
Oh, yes. Goodness sakes, yes. Some of them just easy as could be for them, and others it, there's an art in it. And then the fellow that drives the team, why, he'll place it around in a bed where he wants it. See, the bundle, the bed is, well, you've seen the beds. Well, the pitcher just pitches it in there, and the one that's in there driving the team, well, he's the one that places the bundles around on his load. But some fellas have the nicest looking even loads when they come in with their bundles all even, you know, and others they just throwed there.
They just what?
Just throwed on.
Oh.
Not, didn't care, you know, or didn't know or what, I don't know, but some of the loads that when they were loaded on nice, the bundles, they looked nice. And then sitting up there driving the horses. Looked good to see it, but then when they're just haphazard way of loading, why, it sure told them that they didn't know anything about it or didn't care.
And that was up to the man that ran the bundle wagon, how the load looked.
The one that loaded the bundles after they were pitched onto the wagon, mm-hmm. You see. There's a way to place those around in there, and you can get more. There's an art in it. A lot of them don't know what it means to, oh, well, it's just like sewing sacks or anything. There's an art in it. You can tell when the bends that come into the machine, the cookhouse wasn't generally very far from the machine. And you could tell anybody that ever loaded bundles onto the wagon, because their bundles were even and nice the outside. There wasn't one sticking here and another one little, and one all the way over here. And you could tell one that was used to doing that. There's an art in it. So.
Well, what happened then when they brought it into the machine? Then how did they get it off the wagons?
Had to pitch it off. The fellas that hauled it into the machine, well, they pitch it over in the feeder on the separator, you see. And they generally be, and sometimes a man feeds that. Did you ever see a man feed one? Well, it's an art. The feeder, they pitch those bundles off the wagon on a little table at the side of the machine, you know, up high. And the feeder, why, each arm would just go in like that, excuse me, you know, and that pulls it, he'll pull the bundle on this side and pull the bundle over here, and that feeds it into the separator.
What did he use to feed it with? He used a pitchfork?
His hands.
His hands?
He just pull it into that feeder, you see. It was just a hole in the top of the separator, and all this work in here underneath was what took the grain, took the kernels from the straw. They just take a hold of the grain. They'd pitch it, usually one from each side. They generally. And then the feeder while he was working his arms just like that, just pulling it in.
Did he cut the string around the bundle?
No, the no, you didn't have to cut it. The machine takes that off.
So he just pushed the whole bundle in?
Well, no, he didn't. If it's too big, he didn't, because it'd plug up the machine, you see. See, it could only take so much as... It just made a revolution, you know, and just they just feed it like that.
Mm-hmm. So he'd push it from one side
off of this little table. What they would unload it on was a table there, you know, and that bundle would lay there until that was pushed off that table down here in the machine, and they just go like that with their arms.
From side to side of the table?
No, just like this was the hole.
Yeah.
And all the machinery part was down
right
in here. And this was, and your table was here at the side. Your
mm-hmm.
arms just like, they just like this. And then that'd push it in there and push it in here. And mm-hmm. there's an art in feeding those things too.
What's the art in that? How fast you feed it?
Yes, how fast and what. Sure. They don't need to think it's no art in running one of those separator things. A lot of people don't know. They don't think it means anything, but it does. Now you can see their arms are going like this. They take a bundle from one side and put it in here, and then they'd take the other bundle, but they didn't put it all in there. They'd wait, you see. See, they just...
They'd wait till there was room in the separator to take.
Well, yes, but they didn't wait long. It just, about the time they'd get this one off, why they'd bring this one off, see, and just kept their arms going like this.
Did they have to work real fast, those men?
Oh, no, not... Just steady. You do that all day, why? But you get used to it. It's, and then down here a ways, you see how to roll the grain. There'd be sack sewers down a ways on the separator, and they'd hang the sacks. It's a place to hang sacks. And then they have a jig that jigs down that grain after it gets in the sack so much while they start to jigging it, you know, bouncing it up and down so as to give it all the space there is in there that the grain can get into. So
there's one man that does that. He's the jigger.
Jigs it. Yeah. There's one that jigs, and then the sack sewer, you see, he's there with his needle. Did you ever see a sack, didn't you? Well, they're interesting. Well, they're about this long, and they're a little crooked.
The needles are?
Uh-huh.
About as long as as long as your finger?
Yeah, about
a little
like
longer than your second finger.
Well, about like that. And there's a hole in the end of them, and they're curved.
Curved on the end?
Yeah, well, they're just kind of like that.
Uh-huh.
And the needle and the sack sewer, you just poke that in the jiggy sack. They have usually a jigger on the sack so as to fill up all the space, you know. Won't be a lot of... Those sacks cost money, too. And there's a fellow that jigs it, and just jig it down. And then they'll set it out for the sack sewer to sew, you know. And
how many stitches? Did he put a lot of stitches in the top, or?
Oh, well, it's about that far apart.
Every inch or two?
Well, about like that. I wouldn't say just how many, but went clear across the top of the sack, you see. And if you had a good sack sewer, you had something. Some of them, they could just poke that old needle in just like that. Pull it up.
Could they keep up with the sacks coming out? Could they keep up with the grain?
Well, there was usually two on a side. Usually two sowers on a side. See, while one sower was a sowing his sack, while the other one was there, a filling a sack, hanging up a sack, you see. And one man can't sew it and hang it on, too. But it's interesting to see how they manage it.
The sack sower, was the sack sower usually a man?
Oh, yes. Well, he was a man or else old enough to handle the sack.
He'd have to carry it after he after it was filled.
As a rule, they did. He'd sew that. The jigger, you see, jigs it down, the grain, so it'd be tight in your sack. And that saves a lot of sacks, you see, if you jig it down. And it needs a good sack sewer. It made good money.
Sack sewer was a good paying job?
Uh-huh. It was a good one. A lot of them, though, they'd sew, but they'd sew too far apart. Put the needle in too far apart, and then when it was raised up, why, it sometimes leak out at the holes in the top. We had a good sack sewer and made good money. It was...
Well, then how did the sacks get piled after that?
Well, the men have to carry them away. You see, as they get them sold, why, they carry them to the sack pile. They pile them up close. Well, not too close. So I suppose they estimate on about how the grain would go, and they carry them, the first ones they carry out, you have to carry farther, and as they pile them up, build them up, why, it's not so far to carry them. But then you've got to lift them up a little higher, you see, to get them up on the pile.
One of those sacks would be pretty heavy?
Oh, well, it's a rule. They'd weigh over two, well, some of them would weigh 175 pounds. Yeah, they were heavy. They earn their money, but it's really an art to see them sew. You wouldn't just take those little needle and just, you'd think they'd run it in their hand. It's an art.
You think they'd run it in their hand?
I say you'd think they would. No, they don't run it in their hand. No, but there's an art in sewing. And a good sack sewer generally got good wages.
What about the other men who were on the crew? There was a separator tender, was there?
Oh, yes, separator tender and an engineer.
What did those men do?
Oh, well, they just tended to the separator. You know, they were busy too. But then, if anything went wrong, you know, you got to watch, because sometimes the things, it kind of plug up, you know, they don't get, and the feeders that feed the grain into the machine. You see the pitcher, bundle hauler, they have those shelves up here. I call it a shelf, but it's part of the separator, and they throw it. It's just for the bundle to light to from the bundle wagon, and they just go like that all the time, you know. They unload a wagon on each side of the separator, see. There's two are working there all the same time. And they just pitch, and on this, on this side would come a bundle.
Yeah.
And over here, you know, that's the way the feeder
had. But then the separator tender, he'd look after if something went wrong?
Oh, yes, if anything went wrong. It's just like that. Your feet, they were just working their arms like that, with a bundle of grain underneath each arm, see? And you're just poking it in this feeder here.
Yeah. The engineer, what did he do? What was his job?
Well, his job was to take care of the engine. Mm. And they had their jobs. But, and you never know, something can go wrong or something, and you pretty soon maybe everything going along, and then they'd holler. And it all depend on what went into the feeder spot. You know, sometimes it'd be something maybe in the grain, in the shock of grain, or bundle of grain. Be something, you know, that the feeder wouldn't take. And you had to watch. Or they'd, anything you'd hear grinding noise, boy, they was hollering. They had, a lot of times it would break to some of the cylinders, I suppose, or something. I don't know.
What did they do? They shut the machine down?
Oh, yes. They'd shut it down as quick as possible when they'd hear a noise, you know, and something wasn't right. But they hollered loud enough that they'd know. It's really interesting to see them.
Did you ever see fires in the field when you were working there? Did they ever?
No, I never did. But then they had fires, but we never did. Or not that I ever saw. This girl and I went 7 years for one man in harvest, 7 different harvests.
What was his name again?
Ed Parker.
And this was near Viola?
Yes. Maybe you know Jimmy Parker. He lives in Palouse.
I don't believe I do.
I went to school with him. But Ed was his brother, but he was an older person. But it's really interesting. You just wonder how they ever get it to go and how they could ever figure it out. I don't know.
Figured out how to do all that?
Yes. So everything just come in, you know, those feeders, the men that fed. There was just like a table up here, and they was here in between. And those bundle haulers would unload their bundle off their wagon onto this table. And that was one on each side, you see. And the feeder just going like that all the time.
I want to ask you again about the cooking that you had to do there in the cookhouse and how that worked. Now, you said there were only two of you that did all that cooking?
Yes, there was only two of us that did all the cooking.
And when did you start in the morning?
2:30. Got up at 2:30. Well, we had breakfast at 4:00.
What did it take for you to get the breakfast ready from when you got up? What did you have to do to get it on the table?
Well, we had to cook it. Cook potatoes, and I'd make biscuit, and make gravy, fried beef, pan of beef steak. When we didn't have bacon, we used to have beef steak.
And you and she divided it up, and each of you took about half the work? Is that how it
worked? Well, I made the bread, and she took care of the meat. Each one, we had our own job. She took care of the meat, and the rest of it, by whoever need to do what they done, so. Yeah, we went 7 years together, 7 harvests. And we was hired from the time we pulled in and 1 year to the next. For the next, we had the job already. To the next.
Now, what was the trouble when you say the wagon would, they'd move the wagon from place to place, the cookhouse?
Well, they'd move the cookhouse to different fields, you know. They'd thresh for different people, the grain, wherever the grain was, the cookhouse was there too. And they'd move the cookhouse. And there you had to pack your stuff in the cookhouse. And maybe you'd be Well, I'd bake bread on the road different times. Maybe just get it in the oven a little while before, and you'd think it'd never be fit to eat. You'd wonder. But they generally eat it.
What would you have to do while they were moving it? You would stay?
Well, we'd stay in the cookhouse and ride, and maybe peel spuds or something.
And hold the bread in the oven, you said?
Yeah, we'd stand and hold the oven door shut over rough ground. Because if we didn't, why, the door would come down and the bread would slide out. And
and you didn't wind up getting sick to your stomach by the time that...
No.
Moved it?
No, we didn't wind up. We knew better. Couldn't do any good to got sick. That'd been worse. No. Hammer all that beefsteak for him to have for breakfast.
Did you decide what the menu was going to be yourselves?
Oh, yeah.
You ordered the food you wanted?
Oh, we did have whatever we wanted. Yeah, we decided on that.
Do you think that the food was real good on those crews? I mean, did the men eat real well?
Well, I thought I'd ate from DJ anymore. Yeah, it was. As good as we could fix it anyway. They seemed to be satisfied. But the boss must have been satisfied. We went 7 years for him. In succession, each harvest.
What did you think what was the conditions like for you to work under? I mean, were they real hard on a person tough for a person to cook in that kind of a setting where you didn't have much but a little?
Well, it wasn't like it was where you had a home or something, but then we had plenty to cook with and plenty. And they eat it, so I guess they liked it.
It was very hot?
Not too bad, because we could raise the sides of the cookhouse. The curtain on the side we could raise and it'd make a draft through. And there was a door in each end. So it wasn't too bad. Sometimes it's kind of hot, but then it wasn't too bad. After you got used to it.
What was the big meal of the day?
All of them. Don't think there's much difference. We usually had pie for dinner. Sometimes we'd just get bread in the oven or cake or something, and they'd come over the hill with the team, had to move. And that was something. Wonder they'd eat the food at all.
What about the dust? Was the dust bad while they were working in the field?
Oh, not too bad, no. It wasn't. See, it's in stubble mostly, so that'd make a difference. Well, there'd be some. It wasn't like. They could expect it. They just swell.
And about what time would you think you got to bed at night? Got to go to sleep? When would you be finished with all this work?
Oh, well, we'd have breakfast. We had to prepare for breakfast the night before, you know. So we wouldn't have so much to do next morning. I don't know, we'd get to bed about after 10 or something like that.
So you only got about 4 hours sleep.
Not very long. You get used to it.
Sounds like when you went to sleep, you met yourself getting up the next...
We did, Bob. But, but then we had plenty to cook and everything.
You think it was, would you say that it was hard work for the men in the field? That it was hard working on the harvest?
Well, it's just, if you're pitching, a lot of the men that handle the bundles to load the bundle wagons, why, it's just like it's pitching on, when they'd come, why, you'd have to load up the drivers. It's, you know, you've been working, but a lot of times some can do it easier than others. Well, they don't want to go out in the harvest field and think that they won't have to work some.
Nurse!
Because it's...
Join me together?
I've got to help.
Just a moment. You said it was it a day?
Two and a half.
It's not bad wages, was it?
Well, no, because he paid us more than some of the others were getting. No, we worked 7 years for that one man.
Was that about what the men were getting in the fields a day? Something like that, two and a half?
Yeah. That wasn't the way like the wages are now, but that was higher than most others got. We worked 7 years for him.
Hmm.
He's hired from the time we pull in the fall for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So he must have been satisfied.
You mean he hired you as soon as you got there for the year that was going to be the next one?
Well, when they pulled in that year, why, he spoke for us for the next year. So.
The following brief section is Alvin Olson of Deary, Idaho, remembering old Joe Wells.
He used to say, "I'm the only white man here, the rest are Swedes." Yeah, he was a good fellow. My dad, we used to go and visit Joe Wells there. And when we'd come by his place, it was just some crisps and wood where to go by Joe Wells' place when we went to Troy. When he see us coming, he'd come out, have us to come in, and give us a feed. Get back. Joe Wells, he was the best fella around here.
Really?
He was, that's what everybody said. He was real good. And he had two boys. Uh, Chuck and Roy. And the daughter, Mary. But they're all gone now, you know. Let me see who lives on that place now. I don't know.